ओमज्ञानचमरङ्गस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्दविसङ्गेन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टम् स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकृदामायं ददाति सपदन्तिकम् वंशकौपाचरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभये च पतितानं भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैतगदाधा श्रीवासुदेवगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. सो ग्रीटिंग्स फ्रॉम New York City. Yesterday went through the 6-hour kirtan at the Bhakti Center, and what a pleasure that is to just absorb yourself in the pure chanting of the holy name. And such quality of kirtan, directly it can experience a person's heart and the purity of the heart by the kirtan they chant. It's kind of mystical, you know, and just so nice to see how the Bhakti Center is developing, practically programs all the time. So many people coming in and out of that building. And so many people who have been around Krishna consciousness for a while but weren't finding a proper organization, community, and presentation which inspired them and made them feel comfortable. It seems a lot of those people are just naturally gravitating and coming back, and very, very good people. It's really the responsibility of the spiritual organization to service the needs of its members. After all, people are coming forward in that path by the teachings and presentations. And, you know, people have to have something that suits their particular culture and ideals. Anyway, it's just wonderful to see, and it's so organic. It's moving faster than the people are managing it, and things are coming together, which makes you understand that spreading any spiritual movement is not a material thing. It's the pleasure of Krishna by the offering of service. And offering of service means people have to be empowered, which means those people who are capable in particular fields and expertise must feel encouraged and facilitated. Sometimes we have stagnant structures. Prabhu Kripa, thanks so much. Anyway, great to see you again there. Staying in New York by the grace of a godbrother. People need to feel encouraged and facilitated. And when you have a kind of leadership style that feels unthreatened by people's abilities and skills, so many people come forward to do service a lot. And wonderful things happen. Anyway, it was just a pleasure for me, a dream for me, be able to sit there in the association of so many qualified people who are centered on Krishna, on the pleasure of Krishna. That creates community. Community means there must be a center. If there's individual agendas and issues that are brought into the public sphere, you don't have love. Love has to be centered, not on oneself, on something greater than oneself. And when it's united around Krishna, Radha Muralidhar, Radha Govinda, Radha Shyam Sundar, Jagannath, Giriraj, when it's centered that way, it's such it's like in an ocean. It just facilitates your comfort. So many people can bathe in the ocean and feel, you know, relaxed. And I was really watching how so many people are, would not be in a community, but now feel kind. Anyway, it was just wonderful. That's all I can say. And I'm looking forward to continuing my participation in that. In my ecstasy of coming here yesterday from upstate New York for that kirtan, and for my program today at Yoga Maya, I forgot my book. So I'm just going to speak on what I spoke upon the Lotus Festival, but in a different way. You know, in Krishna consciousness, you can speak the same thing many, many times, because the nature of sacred texts is that they're dynamic. They're alive. It's just like a relationship with a person. You know, the person in that relationship can give more and more of themselves. So when you're dealing with spiritual phenomena, they can give what you're dealing with has unlimited revelation. Unlimited revelation. And you experience that. You experience that in chanting the holy name of Krishna. You can get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And the deeper you go, the deeper you go. The more you concentrate, the more you focus, the more these syllables, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. 16 syllables, 32 syllables. But one never gets tired. One never gets tired because it's alive. And spirit is unlimited, basically. That's why in the Sukshastakam it says, Anandam Bhuti Vardhanam, that the holy name, increasing unlimited ocean of transcendental bliss. Because it's spiritual. When you connect to the God platform, when you connect to the spiritual platform, it's not limited, because that's the nature of spirit, that's the nature of God. It just increases continually. So, whether it's the holy name, whether it's a darshan of the deities, whether it's relationship with Guru and Krishna and the many manifestations, whether it's the sacred text, if one gives their consciousness and heart, there is reciprocation. And so many things come. Pesham, satatayuktanam, bhajatam, prithipurvakam, dadami, buddhi, yogam, tvam, yenama. For one who worships me with faith and devotion, I give them the understanding. And because that understanding is coming from Krishna, then it's not limited. I had so much in my life experience with studying Shastra, studying the same thing, studying the same thing again and again, that newer and newer things come out. And there's that scene when the Bhagavatam was spoken the second time at Naimisharanya. The Bhagavatam was spoken at Naimisharanya, and then there's that scene and the sages have been 1,000 years in a fire yagya. And they're throwing grains and they say swaha. Swaha literally means, as one Indian sannyasi, an old kind of Indian sannyasi, you really get off on this line that swaha means that I'm swa, my own, I'm giving myself. So he called swaha self-sacrifice. Yagya means sacrifice, ultimately the self. You're not sacrificing the self, you're sacrificing the false conception of the self that I am independent from the divine. You're letting go of the resistance to the divine absolute will, which manifests and rules everything. There's a universal body. We're part of that universal body. And the part of the body serves the body. And I give simple example. You can mention it many, many times. The hand is part of the body. It has to let go. If the hand had sentience, had independence, which we do, we are part, but we have some independence. The hand has to let go of the resistance to serve the needs of the body, because serving the needs of the body is serving everything. So they were making sacrifice out of compassion. If the nature of the saintly person is to think about others and to feel for their pain, can't be saintly unless you feel for the pain of others and you think of their benefit. That is the struggle in consciousness. Our mind is filled with so many fluctuations of calculations based on situating ourselves to have more control and enjoyment in the world. The struggle. When you become saintly, you step out of that. You enter into a mood of service. You're for others. You can just think very, very practically.
Well,
I bet you put that on to me, or
yeah.
I don't need it.
Well, I use it on the other room. It works.
I think that's better.
All right, but yeah, turn it off
when you go. I'll turn it off when I go. If you think very, very clearly, hi, Bokum. Get it out now?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, fellow people.
Mars. The love of that.
Okay, so I gave you that general date. Until I go in September, I need to spend time in New York. I'll let you know the date. I'm so fortunate that I need to spend time in New York, and I have, like, the best place. Nice God, brother, Prabhu Kripa. He's a scientist. Brilliant scientist, actually. So you actually can think very, very practically, who are the people that you admire? People who think of themselves or people who think of others? It's so basic and core that that's what spiritual is. Spiritual means that you do what's right despite what it means to yourself. Now, doing what's right also entails taking care of yourself. But if it entails sacrificing oneself, one will do it. A person will live by principles. They're confident that principles lead to the best. Sacrifice leads to the best. Dharma, duty, doing what's right, leads to auspiciousness. And it's always refreshing to see a person who lives by principles. And a person who lives by principles makes a lot of sacrifice for others. You'll always see that. Because they're out of that calculation of me, 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 me. There may be me. There may be Ted. I may be a principle to take care of myself, take care of my needs. But that the guiding principle is not their needs. The guiding principle is Dharma, and Dharma includes their needs. It's not that I take care of my needs, and within my needs is also Dharma. No, Dharma rules one's life. And because Dharma rules one's life, that they're also one's needs, but if Dharma says to sacrifice one's needs, one will even sacrifice their life. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book about Krishna's father, Vasudev, because he said, there is nothing too difficult for man in the discharge of his duty. And it's beautiful because it's love. Whenever you see a person making altruistic sacrifice, especially spiritual, swaha, it's a beautiful thing. So they were making sacrifice at Naimisharanya. But then they became tired. Because it's not susukam. It's not pleasurable. That type of sacrifice is for some objective. The sacrifice is not pleasure. The objective is the path is not pleasurable. The objective. But bhakti, when we sacrifice in love, it's pleasurable. Because there's no other objective than what you're doing. You don't have any goal other than what you're doing. Agnani is analyzing and renouncing. But his objective is something besides that. The karmi is making sacrifice, but his objective is something beyond that. The devotee is making sacrifice. There's no objective beyond that sacrifice because the sacrifice is I'm giving myself in love, which is satisfying. Because it is the nature of the soul. It is the expression of the soul. It is the perfection of the soul. To give ourselves in sacrifice and devotion. And that sacrifice and devotion is fulfilled when it's reposed on the unlimited, when it's reposed on the divine, which is inclusive of everything, when it's reposed on that which is eternal. Otherwise, the love will not be satisfied because it will be interrupted. If it's not pure, it'll be interrupted because it doesn't suit your needs, you'll give up your partner. When the love is pure and it's reposed in something that is real, something that is eternal, when you enter the inner sphere beyond the fluctuations of the mind, how satisfying that is. Now, I've been studying Brahma Vimohan Lila. I'll just share a little bit of you with you. And you know, it gives this vision of reality, which externally looks mythological. But when you meditate on it a little bit deeply, you begin to understand the reality in it. And what is the ultimate reality? The ultimate reality is rasa, an overwhelming experience, bhakti rasa, of love and devotion to everything. When Vyasa is the Vedas, and he's the editor of the Vedas, and he keeps on editing it with realization, changing its form, really meditating on what people need are, and trying to shape the message. Kept on doing that. And wasn't satisfied. And then his guru came. Kind of a transcendental system when there's legitimate need in the heart for shelter. That shelter comes. So his guru came and told him that what he's done so far is not ultimately satisfying because it hadn't sufficiently glorified Krishna. And that's a very significant statement, not some sectarian understanding. You haven't sufficiently glorified that which is the sum, basis, and support of everything, which is also the source of ultimate beauty, which you are constitutionally part of and meant to serve. You haven't sufficiently glorified. So he went into this deep, deep meditation, inspired by that thought, I have to have something deeper, because I'm not satisfied. Therefore, there's something wrong. Because when you are aligned perfectly with your nature, there's complete harmony and satisfaction. So when there's dissatisfaction, you can understand an alignment is needed. Some kind of alignment is needed. So he really wanted to find out what that is. And he went into this deep, deep meditation. And the meditation he did was he began to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak paniyate. Without distraction, this is meditation. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And then what happens is, in that type of meditation, Chaito Darpanam Marjanam, the chitta, the mind becomes undistorted. The mind is distorted by selfishness. When your heart becomes filled with pure love, the static in the mind dissipates, and you have a perfect lens to see the world. So he saw a pashyat purusham purnam. He saw a pashyat purusham shah. He saw that there was a God, that there was a Supreme Lord, without the defect of impersonality, who was Bhagavan. He was God. He possessed Bhagavan, all opulence, the strength to maintain everything, the source and well of all beauty, which is Krishna, and the intelligence, intelligent design, he saw he had all this opulence. And he saw Maya Chittan Apasriyam. He saw that all energies were subordinate to that absolute reality, and thus serving that absolute reality in love. So this is the author of the Vedas. In the depth of his realization, he gets this vision. And what does he see? He sees Krishna and his devotees and the incredible exchange of love, which is the ultimate aesthetic experience, just like a drama. You feel the romance, you feel the tragedy. So you saw the ultimate reality is just this feeling of devotion and exchange dynamically. So when you look at the pastimes of Krishna with a little faith, you'll see this rasa vaisaha. You'll see this perfect exchange of love between God and God's energies and all his devotees, which are unique receptacles to express that love in an ultimate variety of ways, with lila or pastimes that churn the ocean of love. That's what Krishna's pastimes mean. Just go a little bit beyond the surface and you'll see the swell of the most intense aesthetic experience of divine love. And you'll understand that we are part of that experience, or we were meant to be part of that experience, and that is the ultimate destination for the bhakta. To be engaged in a relationship with the divine in reciprocation. Krishna means all attractive, which means that absolute reality who is all powerful, but all loving. we are connected with. So you look at the pastimes in this way, and it's very interesting. So you have Krishna. He just killed a big demon, which also is not an ordinary thing. Because the demons exemplify certain material qualities. And Krishna's subduing of those demons actually is directed towards those qualities within yourself. So when Krishna kills that demon, and the anartha, the unwanted quality that the demon exemplifies, is shown in its full despicableness, if that's a word. It's, Krishna kills it. So Krishna goes to the, after he kills this demon, he's with his friends, and it's getting late, he was delayed. And their lunch is being delayed, so they stop. Krishna says, why don't we stay here by the bank of the river? Sukheli Sampat. Sampat means assets. Sukheli, it has all assets for this exchange of love. Sukheli. Kheli means white. And there are white sands. There are lotuses with buzzing bees. And there are birds echoing in the forest. And they sit on the white sands. And Krishna begins to exchange with the devotees. So this scene is such a beautiful scene, and it's a significant scene. Krishna is sitting there in the glory of his beauty. It's love manifest for the pleasure of everything. And there's nothing more beautiful than Krishna. There's a perfection of beauty. There's a perfection of attractiveness. There's a perfection of love which you can have a relationship with. And these are the perfected souls that do. They're his friends. Saman Bhagavatam. They're equal to him. Because that's what friendship is. Friendship is only among equals. So for God to exchange friendship, which is such a wonderful, core, beautiful experience, he cannot be greater in power. So he becomes equal for the full expression of his heart. Isn't that an interesting concept? To fully enjoy love in all its varieties, in all its intimacy, in all its sweetness, you cannot be greater than others. Or you cannot manifest that part of yourself that is greater than others. And therefore, that manifestation, which facilitates love in all its relationships, is the Swayam Bhagavan. It's the full manifestations. The power, the glory, the grandeur is not the constitutional position. It is the ontological position of God. But it's something that is imposed upon his sweetness, and in the same sense that a person is a high court judge, when he's natural, he's not that. That's something he has to assume. He has to change his demeanor. He has to cover his intimacy. But when that person is themselves, their true nature comes out in all these wonderful relationships. So here's the perfection. That there's an ultimate reality in the splendor of all its beauty. And there are separated parts for the exchange of love, Eko Bahu Sham. The one becomes many, eternally becomes many, for this dynamic exchange of love. And they're particles of consciousness. The symptom of the soul is consciousness. The full manifestation of that consciousness is love. And for that love to be ultimately fulfilled, for ourselves to be ultimately fulfilled, we must have love that is eternal. It can't be with the duality that it will end. It can't be with the duality that the object of my love is temporary. So the perfection of that consciousness, the expression of that consciousness, which is love, in its perfection, is with an eternal object of love that is attractive in the supreme degree, that brings out the deep sense to want to please. What is prema? Prema is the attraction between two beings in relationship. Prema really means when the source of our love is Krishna, it's all attractive. And therefore it's pulling out our sense of surrender and sacrifice and happiness in that relationship. So this scene is such an amazing scene. Krishna sitting among all the cowherd boys. And each one is sharing with Krishna their picnic lunch. Which is what? It's an expression of love. Why? Because the mothers in Vrindavan, they wake up in the morning and they cook with the intention of pleasing Krishna, because their sons will picnic with Krishna, and as young boys do, they'll eat off of each other's plates. So the mothers know that Krishna will be eating this, and therefore they put all their bhakti, all their devotion. And devotion becomes the best teacher, because when you love, when you want to please, it maximizes the ability to access the abilities you have for that pleasure. This is no more powerful emotion than love. So the food is fragrant to please Krishna. It is colorful to please Krishna. It is taste thee to please Krishna. It has the right texture to please Krishna. And therefore, the food is that love, because the food is announcing, I want you to be pleased. And that's what love is. So Krishna is sharing, but he's eating the love of the cowherd boys that are bringing these baskets to share, and the love of the mothers who cooks it. Rasa Vaisa. This is the ultimate reality. It's an ocean. It's all love. It's all rasa. Jiva Goswami says, Nigama Kalpat Puro Galitam Palam Shuka Mukar Amrita Dravya Vibhata Bhagavatava. Drink this rasa. Drink this rasa. Because this is what this Bhagavatam is about. About this rasa. And he said, it's like a fruit where the pits, the seeds, the skin, every part of the fruit is as relishable as the fruit. So the Bhagavatam is that mood of relish. It's that mood of relish. Krishna ties up the calves and he's eating with the cowherd boys and they're joking. And then Lord Brahma he sees this going on. And he's a little bit bewildered about who is Krishna, because he's not manifesting his Aishwarya or his opulence. Balakeli, Yajnabhuk, Balakeli. Krishna is Yajnabhuk. God is eating all the sacrifice. Balakeli, but he's playing like a boy. And Brahma's looking at this beautiful form of Krishna with his lotus eyes that are practically extending to his ears, his reddish tinge of his lips, his golden garment, his peacock feather, and his general graceful form that is so alluring for relationships. Anytime we see a beautiful person, not just physically, but beautiful in heart, giving person, beautiful person, intelligent person, wealthy person, not greedy, but wealthy, and we see opulences, it just naturally brings out the sense in our heart that I am meant to serve something greater than myself. We're immediately attracted, because that's what we are constitutionally. We're part. We're meant to serve something greater. That's why in the modern world, when we see the bhutis, we see powers, we see opulences, we want to serve. Even today, rock stars, someone who is famous, someone who's extremely intelligent for that, famous because of his intelligence or famous because of their beauty. We want to serve. Even people become infatuated. They see someone very attractive and they fall in love. And what does that mean? That means I want to serve them. Real love, not just lust. So there is an entity who has the embodiment of all that beauty expressed in the form, expressed in the intelligence. And that's Krishna. But for his full manifestation of love, he can't be covered with position that puts him above people, that doesn't allow the intimacy of love, and therefore the full manifestation of his heart. This pastime is very interesting because Brahma, he wants to, he just can't understand this. How this Madhurya, how this sweetness does not limit the absolute, because sweetness entails a sacrifice of grandeur, a sacrifice of opulence, sacrifice of the accoutrements of power. They can't manifest from that platform. They can only manifest from the platform of sweetness. So he becomes confused. And therefore he makes a test. Let me see by my powers if I can bewilder. So when Krishna, he tells the coward boys, just tie up your calves. Just tie up your calves. And Lord Brahma comes. And then the calves disappear, and Krishna goes, and Lord Brahma manifests as all the cowherd boys and calves. They are Krishna. Because the principle is that absolute reality can unlimitedly expand for loving relationships. That makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, it's such a beautiful pastime. That's just a little bit part of it. But we know that in the pastime, for Krishna to make this point that Madhurya, or the intimacy of relationships, is not limiting a person, it's part of their opulence. And it doesn't negate the grandeur, it's just that the grandeur or the opulence is not shown. But Brahma tries to control. And whenever someone tries to demonstrate their power over someone who is superior, one's power is immediately diminished. And the beautiful analogy is it's like a glowworm trying to demonstrate its power in the face of the sun. It's immediately diminished. Anytime we can try to control, we're bound. It's just like a citizen who is a citizen. They're under the government. And when they try to defy the laws of the government, even a just government, even a proper democracy, if there is such a thing, when you try to exhibit your powers, they become diminished. It's so interesting. Once you try to control, which is not the position we have, we're not the controllers, we're the controlled, we're the part of something greater, we're not that which is greater. So as soon as we try to have ego, have control, have power, we become bound. Just the way universal government works, universal order works. We become bound. Funny, as soon as we try to control, we are controlled. Why? Because it's not our position, and therefore to satisfy it, we have to be put under illusion. So we're controlled by illusion. As soon as we desire to control, which is something we cannot have by our constitution, immediately we're controlled by illusion. We're controlled by our ignorance. Anyway, I just wanted to know some details, but that end part is beautiful because that beautiful boy, Krishna, 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 he manifests all his opulence in such a beautiful way, progressively showing Brahma. You see, now Krishna has become the cowherds. He'd stole the cowherds. Brahma had stole the cowherds, and now Krishna, when Brahma comes back, he sees that all the cowherd boys are there, but he thought he just stole them in a moment of his time, which is 6 months here, so a few moments of the year. He comes back to see the fun he's caused in the previous years, and he sees that all the cowherd boys and calves are there. And he's completely bewildered because they're exactly like everything, to the tone of their voice, to their psychological natures, to their exact duplicate looks, to their memories. Everything is exactly the same. And he kind of stares, and then Krishna reveals what actually happened, that he manifests into all the cowherd boys. And now Brahma looks around and he sees each of the calves and each of the cows as a beautiful Vishnu form. And he sees they're each surrendered by all God's energies, powers, opulences, including the pious living entities. So, it's just such a beautiful scene, because he sees that the devotees are surrounding each form doing kirtan. He sees that so many opulences are there, and he sees this is all covered by the light of God. And then he experiences that divine form within his senses, all 11 senses, the mind, six knowledge acquiring, the six working senses. Everything becomes overwhelmed with this energy of God, the beauty of God, and it creates such an ecstasy in the body, because each of the senses is seeing, tasting, hearing, feeling and seeing God. And it creates an overwhelming experience of Bodhi, its magnanimity. I may deserve something, I may deserve, but a darshan of this magnitude of the Supreme Lord, and my senses are overwhelmed with that absolute reality's fragrance, his physical beauty, the sound of his flute, the softness of his skin, the fragrance of his body, all the senses become overwhelmed in Lord Brahma face. To make a long story short, he realizes that his powers and opulences are nothing compared to the glory of Krishna. He realizes that. He just sees clearly. And he's humbled. Humbled by what? Especially humbled by the love. When the beautiful heart of a loving person touches our heart with love directed towards us, we're humbled. Humbled because when you see mercy, when you receive mercy, you finally can see that there's something greater than oneself. Because mercy has to come from above. And the greater you recognize the glories of what's above, the more intensely mercy will be felt. And the more intensely the heart will be filled with a loving feeling of such joy that one will be completely satisfied and humbled. Humbled. The greater the thing that you feel, the greater the object that is making you feel it. When you feel the ultimate mercy of divine love, the more you realize what you're getting, the more you realize how unqualified you are for receiving it. And Brahma becomes happy in humility. He falls to the ground. He bathes the lotus feet of Krishna with the tears of his eyes. He becomes overwhelmed with love, and he wants to stay there. One only wants to move when one's not happy. Anyway, we'll end here for today. Are there any questions? Anyone like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you, Gail.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
I think I'm getting kind of lost in this Brahma Vimohan Lila. You know, if you could just tell me, like, the main one, two, or three points that you would really like us to come away with.
Yeah, these are the main points, okay?
Yes.
These are the three main points. One, that Madhurya, the sweetness of God, is not a lesser manifestation of the absolute truth. It's a greater manifestation of the absolute truth because it doesn't diminish God's opulence. It just covers those opulences. Two, when we become proud of our opulence, God will manifest His to make us humble. Three, when you try to control something greater than yourself, your powers become diminished.
And the reason why He wants us to experience that humility, that inferiority, is so that we can experience mercy and thereby experience love.
We'll make it real simple. Once you're proud, you can't experience love.
Right.
And you can't be happy, and you can't be who you are. Okay, anyone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, hearing from you, It was today, the second day of Purushottam month. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, you know, I was just reading and I just wanted to tell you that, you know, Krishna in different ways, now this is his in pastimes, but in Purushottam month and the glorification of Purushottam month in Padma Purana, Krishna tells that Draupadi suffered everything because she didn't believe, you know, Purushottam month glories from Durvasa Muni. That's why she got five husbands because she was, you know, praying to Lord Shiva. But anyway, the reason is that for some month, you know, every listener should, you know, read 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, at least one verse. That's what, you know, Krishna tells us. Couple of things, listening to Bhagavatam and reading Purushottam Yoga, which is 15th chapter, at least one verse, if it's possible to read, you know, 20 verses.
You know, it's always auspicious to increase our devotion.
Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
It's always auspicious to increase our devotion. I don't remember when Papa was here really following Purushottam Mass. Maybe he just didn't give us, you know, because we already had too much.
Yes.
And do what we could do.
Yes.
But it's always auspicious to increase one's devotion. Yes. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Henry, Hare Krishna. Hi. Where are you, Henry?
I'm home in Washington now. No
okay.
Chapels are Friday mornings at 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
So Johnny Miles just told me that, you know, that would be, you know, so anyway, that's something we can think about.
We'll say that again. The what is what? Say that.
You know, the chapels that, you know, you might be able to speak at are Friday mornings at 10 o'clock. And I think they'll be starting up in a couple of weeks here.
Okay, I'm going to call you this week and we'll work out something, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Okay,
that was a really good class. That was a beautiful class. Thank you so much.
Oh, you got it. Thank you. But, Henry, you got to get down to the Bhakti Center one time. I think you'll enjoy it.
I can't wait. I can't wait to get there.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hey, Bo Maharaj.
Brother Indrani, Hare Krishna. Okay.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Chris in Pennsylvania.
Chris, we got to get together.
Yeah, that would
we'll
be
have
very
to
nice.
Figure it out. Yeah, I'll communicate with you. Anybody else
like
to say hello? Okay, we can end that bunch of culprits through this.